Hello, everybody. And we are going to be joined in a few moments by none other than Mr. Reverend Ted Pike, who many of you know has been with us for some time now. Ted Pike runs the website truthtellers.org. And the reason that he called me today was to discuss the case of what has happened to a scholar, historical scholar, Mr. Frederick Tobin, in his interdiction in the European Union, so to speak, in England, and of course why he was arrested and being charged with a heinous crime of Holocaust denial and or anti-Semitism. So with me right now on the line is Reverend Ted Pike. Hello there, Ted.
Hello, Rick. Thanks for having me again.
Yes, welcome back. And as you know, I had heard about this case when it first broke some time ago. And, of course, I wanted to get your perspective on it and to see exactly what you have to say, since you have been so involved in exposing the ADL, B'nai B'rith International, and its campaign against intellectual freedom and intellectual scholarship worldwide. Go ahead, please. Tell us what you think.
Well, thank you. Yes, this is a very ominous development for basically two reasons. Number one, this is the first example of real international enforcement of hate crimes laws.
Mm.
See, what's going on here is that the government of Germany, of course, was saddled with an so-called anti-hate law in 1945 with the collapse of the Third Reich, which both ADL Europe and Israel came in there. And they imposed this draconian law upon the German people that if there was ever a word spoken in public or private casting any kind of doubt on the numbers, the sacred 6 million figure of the Holocaust dead or the means of achieving that through gas chambers, this was a federal offense in Germany. And so that law has ruled Germany ever since. Now, Frederick Tobin is an Australian Holocaust reductionist and has been on the scene for the last 30 years or so. But he actually was a tourist coming into Germany in 1999 and began to talk to some people and was overheard by the police, and presto, he was in jail for seven months in Germany. But in this particular instance, he has not entered Germany speaking his mind since that time, I don't believe. However, the German government is claiming that because Tobin's website penetrates Germany, that he is in fact spreading his propaganda still in Germany, even though it's originating in Australia. And they have convinced the European Union to serve a warrant to the British for the arrest of Tobin, who was discovered in a jet airliner waiting for takeoff at Heathrow Airport. So they nabbed him there. They now have him in custody. And by the 17th of this month, they will determine whether this EU warrant will be observed, and he will go off to certain conviction in Germany, like Ernst Zundel and Germar Rudolph and so on.
All right, I hear the break, Ted, so we'll pick up on the other side of the break with that point, and we will we'll discuss and explore the options here and what more ominous signs are in store for world freedom by the ADL types. All right, Rick Adams, we'll be right back in 3 minutes with Ted Pike. Once again, we're talking about the kidnapping, if you will, of Frederick Tobin. And, you know, I met Frederick, Ted, going back a few years ago at the Washington, D.C. Barnes Review Convention in the American Free Press.
I met him there at the Barnes Review Convention, too.
Yes, right. And in fact, I believe I had the pleasure of introducing him in his scholarly address, and the gentleman is quite scholarly in his approach, and he is as innocuous as one can be, really, when you think about it. Here's a man as gentle as a lamb, and yet he roars as a lion, you know, with basic fundamental historical truth, and he is impeccable as a researcher. And it's no wonder that many have come to his defense just on those grounds alone. And you think of David Irving now and others who are seeking to to defend his academic credentials and his more than that, his freedom, his scholarship, his liberty to question certain events in historical revisionism. So this comes as a real shock, a jolt to the academic community as well as to you know, people concerned with liberty worldwide.
Yes. Well, what's so disconcerting about this is that if these people like David Irving and Tobin and so on can be apprehended through the long arm of international government warrants, then conceivably the rest of us could as well. Isn't that true?
Well, and, anyone, sure. Everyone.
Yeah, and so this suspect. this is a precedent which simply has to be opposed. And by the way, at my website, www.truthtellers.org, I have a recent article on this subject, which is called International Hate Laws Bite Down. And at the end of that article, we give some phone numbers for prominent members of the British government that people can start phoning immediately, protesting this outrage. And also at truthtellers.org, we also have quite a few more names of prominent members of Parliament and so on that can be contacted. But I believe that we should have a world upheaval of protest coming not only from the United States but from Europe, letting the British government know that it's a travesty that Great Britain, which was basically the cradle of free speech for Western nations, has now become complicit in prosecuting and persecuting simple expressions of ideas like this. Another very disconcerting part of this this warrant is that it includes the charge of anti-Semitism.
Yes.
There's two parts to it. The first is Holocaust denial. Part number two is Frederick Tobin is an anti-Semite. And as you and I well know, the whole term anti-Semite has become so politicized and subjective now that it really has very little meaning. And you can even go to some recent dictionaries, and they're saying that anti-Semitism is criticism of Jews, or anti-Semitism is criticism of matters Jewish, and so on. And nothing could be farther from the truth. But to have such a politicized term become the basis now for prosecution and ultimate criminalization and imprisonment of a scholar and a historian is just beyond belief.
Yeah, and you know, here's a guy who is simply in transit, who is traveling and you know, minding his own business, and manages to, as you say, fall under the prey of the, you know, the really the ADL Gestapo, for you know, lack of a better term, when they have invoked the powers of governments today in Europe, Christian Europe and Christian America. They certainly are trying to extend their tentacles to be able to simply arrest someone for the crimes of alleged, quote, anti-Semitism, which, of course, is ludicrous on its surface. So that is deeply troubling, as you point out. And the other thing is that this European Union has been very, very much under criticism lately for just such reasons, among others, haven't they?
Well, yes, and also with the European Union is the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe, which is the ADL's big hate crimes Gestapo, with 55 member nations now submitting to its leadership and definitions and so on.
Right.
This is really a European version of what we're beginning here in our own U.S. State Department.
Yes.
In its Office of Global Anti-Semitism, and that's why this issue of anti-Semitism and an indictment. Arrest and indictment for anti-Semitism is particularly ominous because here, just this spring, the State Department's Office of Global Anti-Semitism made its report to Congress, and very clearly, very flatly stated that it's anti-Semitic to believe the New Testament account that the Jewish leaders masterminded the crucifixion of Jesus Christ. Well, there you see, that's a noose put around tens of millions of Bible-believing evangelical Christians. So to have a internationally enforced a hate crimes decree that anti-Semitism is now a crime in the view of the world governing bodies and so on is truly, truly ominous. And that's why this this development now with Frederick Tobin is not just a European matter or a British or a German matter. It's a world, it should be a world concern, not just for people who are on the political right, but for Christians.
Yes, particularly. You know.
Yes,
I wonder what Sarah Palin would have to say now. I mean, here she has a divided loyalty between her love of the Jewish state and the Holocaust stories, and on the other hand, her professed faith in this Christian doctrine, so-called, of Christian Zionism, you know, and here, and people like Hagee and Falwell and others that she, of course, would gravitate toward. My goodness, that's a scary thought, you know. For they're talking about the extremism of Reverend Wright and some of his statements against whites and so forth, and other concepts in American history, and yet here's a doctrine that's so extreme, this Christian Zionism, so contradictory, if you will. It's outlandish that people are not even talking about it. But here the media have been complicit in all of this, too, as you pointed out so often, Ted, and much to your credit, we see how the media are playing the game. I mean, and the way the attacks are coming from the neocon on Reverend Wright and on Obama simply because of his what they call anti-Semitic, anti-American viewpoints. Now they're what they're doing is putting them together, linking them, if you will. Anti-Semitism now is considered anti-Americanism, and that's slipping out in all of their New York Post articles every day, as you can see.
Uh-huh. That's right, and just a reminder that Ernst Zundel, you know, was deported and held in Canada, sent to Germany to stand trial as a domestic terrorist. That is what was the charge against him, a domestic terrorist for questioning the veracity of the 6 million figure of Holocaust dead. Now that's a kind of a stretch, isn't it?
Well, that's exactly, though, what some are suggesting we do in this country under the guise of fighting terrorism, isn't it?
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, you know, in Canada, if a pastor or a talk show host or a publisher, writer, if they do claim that the Jews killed Christ 2,000 years ago, well, that's considered holding the Jewish people up to hatred and contempt, you know, as Christ killers. And that's a violation of Section 319 of the federal hate crimes law and makes you into a hate criminal in Canada.
Mm.
Well, if you make that same assertion in the United States under our State Department Office of Global Anti-Semitism, you also become anti-Semitic, which is pretty close to being a hate criminal here in the United States. So it doesn't take too much imagination to see that Homeland Security and people like Michael Chertoff and company could very, very easily begin to close the gap between hate criminal, anti-Semite, and domestic terrorist, and make us into domestic terrorists as Christians indictable under Homeland Security.
That's not far-fetched, I'm afraid, Ted, either. For people that think that it sounds outlandish, that is what the ADL really is seems to be, in my opinion anyway, proposing.
Well, you know, Teddy Kennedy, last year on the floor of the Senate, as he was trying to get the federal hate bill passed, he did say that hate crimes are a form of domestic terrorism.
Mm-hmm.
And similarly, of course, the ADL says that, but more ominously, the FBI now on its website under hate crimes, they are very frank in saying that they are taking an aggressive role considering hate crimes their number one civil rights issue here in the United States, and they are saying the same thing.
Wow.
Hate crimes are a form of domestic terrorism.
Unreal. All right, we'll be back. Ted Pike, my guest. I'm Rick Adams, Radio Avenger. We'll be right back.
By some awful quirk of fate, the Morlocks had become the masters and the Eloi their servants. The Morlocks maintained them and bred them like cattle.
And we are back once again with Ted Pike of TruthTellers.org. And yes, everything you've said so far, Ted, I must say, is not an exaggeration. And if it were, I mean, certainly I'd be the first one to raise it. But here I go to the ADL website even today and see the kind of things they've come up with. Anti-Semitism is surging, they say, on the web, those web finance boards about the collapse of people's money and investments worldwide, as it did in the 19-teens and 20s and 30s. And so they are certainly engaging in quite a bit of paranoia and are seemingly calling for some sort of action against the web, and they're hoping something can be done to, as they say, help protect the Jewish community, which they've circled the wagons with, and they've suggested, that anti-Semitism is at an all-time high now. And we've been hearing this for 100 years, since the ADL has been around, almost.
Yeah, it was created to ostensibly address crisis of anti-Semitism in 1913.
Right. Right.
Speaking of the Jews and
sure.
their desire to suppress criticism, we have to be aware that in Israel today, a revived Sanhedrin of 71 sages is very much alive. It was begun basically about 2003, 2004,
mm-hmm.
and it is now ascending in its power and authority and beginning to issue edicts, which it calls judgments.
Yes.
Against the nations and geopolitical issues and so on. And recently you may be aware that the Sanhedrin pronounced against the Beijing Olympics because the Chinese government had been killing people and cutting up their body parts and selling them for medical purposes. Anyway, in that particular instance, the Sanhedrin declared that they were sovereign, quote-unquote sovereign, over the nation of China in this matter, and they demanded that they start submitting themselves to the Noahide laws of the Talmud.
Yes.
And one of the actually number one Noahide law,
mm-hmm.
as repeated in the Talmud, is against idolatry. And it says in the Talmud that idolatry, which means a belief in Jesus Christ, the false Messiah, Jesus Christ,
mm-hmm.
who is regarded as a blasphemer by the Talmud and a false prophet, etc., is worthy of death. So what these Noahide laws, which are intended to be enforced by this rising Sanhedrin, are basically anti-Christian laws, which these evil Jewish leaders want to impose literally on the entire world. And what they're wanting to do is to make the Sanhedrin into an international court of justice on a par with the United Nations and The Hague, actually superseding that eventually to exercise sovereignty and,
mm-hmm.
I believe, hate crimes enforcement around the world.
Now, let me ask you this, Ted, the next magical question, if I might. How in the world, what would it take, what magnitudinous event or series of events would it take for the governments of the world to accept that, to allow that sort of judgment to take place?
Well, isn't that what we're seeing in Europe right now?
Yeah.
Of course, England has been a socialist country basically since about 1947 and has made many, many compromises, dissolving not only its own colonial empire, but a great deal of its founding principles, and I think what we see is the natural corruptibility of the socialist and liberal political systems of the world means that they will gravitate toward these kinds of open and secret alliances and agreements and treaties and so on. And as I may have mentioned, the British government right now is saying they've already made a treaty with the EU that whatever political prisoners the EU demands be surrendered up to the European Union, Britain has to go along and arrest those people and deliver them over to the EU. And that's exactly what's going on right now, is that their own hate crimes Gestapo took Tobin off of the airplane in order to please the European Union. Well, if that's happening in Europe, what if we have a confederation of Canada, the United States, and
mm-hmm.
Mexico?
Mm-hmm.
We would probably have a European-style, a Canadian-style hate crimes laws automatically linked together with us with all kinds of cooperation through secret treaties. This certainly seems to have been the case with the extradition of Germar Rudolph and also of Ernst Zundel about 4 years ago, where Zundel was literally taken out of his home in Pigeon Forge, Tennessee, taken to a solitary confinement in Canada, and similarly, Germar Rudolph was apprehended, much like Tobin, in Chicago and taken off to imprisonment
mm-hmm.
in Germany.
Yes. Well, I have another question then that would follow up to that, and we'll take the break. But how is that all going to wind up being decided and judged in the city of Jerusalem by the Sanhedrin? That'll be my question. If you think you can answer that one, Ted, that will be the $64,000 question. All right, we'll be back. I'm Rick Adams, Ted Pike, truthtellers.org. You may join us tonight at 800-313-9443. Be right back.
Have you been at the front?
Front? What front?
Why, the
war, of course. What war?
Good heavens. You mean you don't know we've been at war with Germany since 1914?
Can man control his destiny? The shape of things to come.
And we're back now. The war continues. And yes, we're with Ted Pike tonight, 800-313-9443. Ted, that question I asked you, how do you think that all of these charges and judgments that are being issued by the new Sanhedrin Council in Jerusalem, how is it going to work that they will be able to at least try in the near future to invoke their net across the globe? And how will Americans be coaxed into surrendering to that, do you think?
Well, right now, the Knesset in Jerusalem is deliberating legislation which would allow the government of Israel to demand from any corner of the earth extradition of anyone who questioned the 6 million figure of the Holocaust or doubted that gas chambers might have been used to facilitate that kind of genocide. And so already we are seeing the Sanhedrin basically wanting to have intercontinental, international powers to go across national boundaries, national sovereignties, constitutions, bills of rights in respective nations, and so on, in order to apprehend those people who might be a threat to them. I do mention in my latest email a recent article on the Internet quoting Raphael Eitan, who is now a
yeah.
member of Knesset,
yeah.
Suggesting the real possibility that Israel might actually kidnap Ahmadinejad of Iran, bring him to The Hague, and have him see him condemned as an international war criminal. Well, that's exactly the kind of very arbitrary, bold move that Israel and Mossad have demonstrated
mm-hmm.
over the past 50 years, in which
mm-hmm.
national boundaries, sovereignty, etc., means nothing to them. They'll go to Argentina, they'll go anywhere in the world, the capitals of Europe, to abduct, to kidnap anyone who they feel is a threat to them. And, of course, The whistleblower Mordecai Vanunu is a classic example of that kind of cloak and dagger abduction. But the fact of the matter is that Jesus did prophesy in no uncertain terms that in the last days, and I'll just quote out of the King James Bible,
mm-hmm.
he said that evil Jews, quote, shall lay their hands on you and persecute you, delivering you up to the synagogues and into the prisons. That's Luke 21:12. Now, he's making very clear that that the primary source of persecution against Christians in the last days are these evil Jews who deliver you up to their synagogues to be condemned to go into prisons. I've written extensively at truthtellers.org on the prison system in Israel, the staggering amount of torture, just brutal and systematic fiendish torture that has been recorded there over the last several decades. And people can go back at Truth Tellers maybe a year or so to a rather definitive, rather long and exhaustively documented study on torture in the prisons of Israel. But this is a reminder to us also that the book of Revelation describes the great harlot Israel in the last days as being bloody with the blood of the martyrs of Jesus Christ.
Mm-hmm.
She ruthlessly works with the beast, the Antichrist, to extirpate Christianity from the world.
Boy, I'm telling you, it is an awesome statement and absolutely scripturally right on. And again, I think that what we will witness is, it's open to speculation, I guess, but seems with all of the economic upheaval, which again, you know, sees the same names and the same tribes, the same faces, the same guilty ones in responsibility and banking for helping to create this crisis artificially, not just here in the United States, but certainly in Europe and in Asian markets now, that they are creating a scenario in which this could very well get out of hand in the not-too-distant future and lead to political turmoil, economic, political, and yes, indeed, even terrorism, physical terrorism, that will then be met with some sort of a new approach to dealing with it. And that might involve, as we see, mass arrests and detention camps, which, of course, many of which are being built by Israeli companies now for Chertoff and Homeland Security, the Pentagon, and so forth. And I'm just theorizing right now as to how this will all work. But I see that when things get out of control and push comes to shove, Ted, it looks like most people would be more inclined to give up their sacred constitution, the Bill of
yeah.
Rights, in order to accommodate some sort of normalcy, don't you think?
Well, it certainly was the history of what happened after the Great Depression in 1929.
Sure.
Was rather than turning us back to our principles, our constitutional values, and turning us to God, the country just went for the New Deal with socialization, liberalism,
yes.
outright communism in the White House with Eleanor, etc., and basically established liberalism and the socialist welfare state, which we are still very much under the influence and control of, actually increasing. And so in times of crisis, humanity seems very inclined to give up fundamental rights and privileges in order to have peace and safety. And I think that we saw, of course, after 9/11, a wholesale willingness of members of Congress
mm-hmm.
to approve Homeland Security and Patriot Act without even beginning to read the many, many hundreds of pages of those bills. I think most members of Congress still have very little idea what is in the fine print of that legislation. Well, I think we could well experience that kind of a wholesale rush towards security leading to the establishment of some kind of international monetary and economic board of the nations out of events which may be moving ahead right now, and it's very ominous. And what I would like to see, you know, the Bible says in their affliction they'll call upon me early. And what I would like to do, of course, is to be, along with you and other patriotic Christian leaders, leading our nation especially toward repentance and faith in God and returning to the values of our Christian founders and forefathers, rather than rushing in the opposite way toward a world antichrist dictatorship.
Boy, I agree, and it looks like that's a good scenario as well. So we will have to see this unfold, but needless to say, we're in the midst of an election now, right now, as you know, Ted, and when this is all over, if we, assuming we have a regularly scheduled election and choices are made and the new Congress is going to be ready to take hold, if that happens as scheduled and things, you know, occur as they are supposed to occur, then we'll probably be looking at Congress addressing these issues as issues of concern in that same context, terrorism, domestic. We've heard that before, domestic terrorism and domestic terrorists. And the ADL, of course, we can count on them as pushing for some sort of, once again, resurrection, if I may use that term, of these bills in Congress that they have tried to push for so desperately in the past, you see?
Yes. Well, I've been doing a lot of writing over the past year since the federal hate bill was defeated last December, but I will, about 2.5 months from now, I'm going to be all over talk radio and continuing to watch very closely the reintroduction of the Matthew Shepard Hate Crimes Bill, the Employment Non-Discrimination Act, or ENDA as it's called. These Orwellian bills are just lined up there, you know, kind of like shark's teeth, ready to move forward. And if, regardless of who gets in as president, we're going to see the ADL agenda come back. And I know that I can count on you and others to help me get the word out. We were spectacularly successful this last 2 years in the 110th Congress of defeating no less than five or six major Orwellian bills, which were either stalled or defeated. And this was a result of being there on the scene, especially 2 years ago, bringing tremendous firepower to the House Judiciary Committee when the hate bill was introduced there. We were able to energize the Republican Congress and begin a movement there fairly early of opposition to the hate bill and all the other similar legislation. We've got to do that again. It's going to be even more of an uphill fight, but I know that our listeners will assist me, and I'm just encouraging them now to get ready mentally, spiritually, to join with me in this tremendous fight.
Absolutely, and we will mention again before the end of the hour how people can access your site and what they can do in the case of Mr. Tobin as well. Let me take a call or two if we can squeeze them in. 800-313-9443 is the number, and let me start with Wes in Idaho. Hello, Wes. You're on the program.
Hello, Rick. Ted. By definition of the word Holocaust means death by fire. I wouldn't want to deny that the bombing of the city of Dresden killed 300,000 or 400,000 people with B-17s and Lancaster bombers, and I guess it was 800 P-51 Mustangs that came in afterwards and strafed these survivors. They brought many of these bodies into the camps to be photographed in Germany to make them appear as though they had died at the camps. In 1933, when the Jews declared war upon Germany, they said it was now time for all 14 million Jews worldwide to mount a campaign against Germany. And then in 1948, just 15 years later, the World Almanac and the New York Times both reported that there was 15 to 16 million Jews. So I think during World War II they actually increased in population, not decreased, but increased. Unless it's some kind of math that I don't understand, 14 minus 6 equals 15 or 16, is it? Must have gone to different schools. A Dr. Charles Larson was hired by the Allied Board of Inquiry to perform autopsies after World War II of the concentration camp dead, and he declared that there were no cases of poison gassings at the camps. Here is an order written up in 1948 by Commander Anton Mueller, second in command, the order was taken by Emil Latchout, who, by the way, testified in one of Ernst Zundel's trials in Canada. And here's what it says. Sending the following memo from Vienna to all interested parties, Military Police Service, circular letter number 31/48, Vienna, 1st October 1948. The Allied Commissions of Inquiry have so far established that no people were killed by poison gas in the following concentration camps: Bergen-Belsen, Buchenwald, Dachau, Flossenbürg, Gross-Rosen, Mauthausen and its satellite camps, Natzweiler, Neuengamme, Niederhagen, which is also parentheses here, Weldersburg, Ravensbrück, Sachsenhausen, Stutzenhof, Dersenstadt. Excuse my German attempt there, but here's the order continues here. In those cases, it has been possible to prove that confessions had been extracted by torture and the testimonies were false. This must be taken into account when conducting investigations and interrogations with respect to war crimes. The results of these investigations should be brought to the cognizance of former concentration camp inmates who at the time of the hearings testified that the murder of people, especially Jews, with poison gas in those concentration camps. Should they continue to insist on their statements, charges are to be brought against them for making false statements.
Mm. You have to remember about much of this Jewish testimony that came out of the so-called Holocaust is that the Talmud, which is the highest ethical religious authority for many of those Jews, Orthodox Jews, encourages them to deceive the Gentiles.
Yes.
It is permitted, the Talmud says, to deceive a goy or a Gentile. And yet most people, especially evangelical Christians, take as gospel truth the testimony of Jewish so-called survivors of the Holocaust.
Well, forensic and documented evidence trump testimony every time. I mean, in the case of the Pentagon, I have videos of some people saying, yeah, I saw it was a Boeing airplane. Then I do you see people saying, oh, I saw it was a little airplane, looked like a private jet. Now, what do you do if you're investigating? What you do is you say, well, we have conflicting testimony, so we have to go to the physical evidence to decide. Well, what does this physical evidence case of the Pentagon say? It certainly was no Boeing airplane. I'll end here just pointing out to the listeners, the Jews have been expelled from 80 countries 100 times, and it looks like it's got to happen again for the sake of the world. Or
I don't know of any country that's left they should be expelled to. And quite frankly, we're running out of room. And, you know, like Ted says, this dragnet of control is just about worldwide now. And it seems like there's no escaping their tentacles, is there, Ted?
Well, what Wes is recounting here are very tantalizing pieces of information which remind us, which underscore the very great importance that people who do this kind of research and come up with these kinds of facts and information and even speculations certainly have a free speech right to express those to the world.
Amen. Thank you, Wes, for your scholarly call, by the way. We'll be back with more of this discussion. Rick Adams, Uncensored Radio Free America. We'll return to wrap things up with another call or two in just 3 minutes.
What have you done? Thousands of years of building and rebuilding, creating and recreating so you can let it crumble to dust. 1,000,000 years, the sensitive men dying for their dreams. For what? So you can swim and dance and play.
We've just been too busy setting up our businesses. We didn't pay enough attention to what was going on around us. We allowed a bunch of thieves and murderers to get control.
Well, we're back, and we are in the final lap of this discussion. Ted, again, for those new listeners who don't know about truthtellers.org, what's the way that they can find out more about this case of Frederick Tobin and persecution worldwide now?
Yes, I have a recent article that just came out at noon today. It's on the homepage of truthtellers.org called International Hate Laws Bite Down. And at the end of this article, we have phone numbers for prominent members of the British government. And also we have quite a list there at truthtellers.org of heads of the House of Commons, House of Lords, etc., prominent people in the British government who should hear from you. And if you have international calling, free calling or whatever, you can call over there. It'll just be a minute or so to let them know in no uncertain terms that we protest the incarceration, the extradition of Dr. Tobin. We will not stand for a precedent of being laid down that international hate crimes bureaucracies can leap across national boundaries and demand extradition of people who are politically incorrect.
Absolutely. Let's take a call here quickly. Joe, hello there, Joe.
Hi, Rick.
Yes.
Rick, Revelation 18:3,
uh-huh.
For all nations have drunk of the wine of the wrath of her fornication,
mm-hmm.
and the kings of the earth have committed fornication with her, and the merchants of the earth are waxed rich.
Yes.
Through the abundance of her delicacies. Can you see the merchants of the earth today?
Oh, boy.
Can you see them?
I see the
waxing
bailout,
rich.
Too. Yes.
Waxing rich. You know, I agree with Ted. Hello, Ted.
Hello, Joe.
You were speaking earlier about the devised calamity worldwide
mm-hmm.
so that they can bring in this one-world system. Well, the one-world stock market crash that we're seeing right now, the orchestrated crash that we're seeing right now, which is deliberate, is going to make it look real dire. And this is going to be the way that they're going to bring in their maybe their one-world currency, if you would, because
mm-hmm.
they have to do something about this problem. And,
they're going to come in
so
as rescuers again, huh?
Yes, they're going to come in as saviors.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to say in coincidence that the 3.5-year period was shortened for the elect's sake to a 5-month period, which is the time of the locust spoken of in Joel chapter 1. I believe that that time could be, if I'm seeing things correctly, possibly next May to September.
Mm.
This could get very dire leading up to next May.
It could be.
Also, I'd like to say that out of the out of your bank accounts, it's very important to get 5 months to 1 year of cash out of your bank accounts into your homes.
All right.
Put it in your home somewhere, hide it, and in a safe, maybe a strong hiding place.
Very interesting.
But keep five months to 1 year supply of bill payments.
Good points. Ted, not much time, but I think those are some words of wisdom we need to consider anyway.
Well, yes, God is our refuge and strength. We need to turn to God as never before in history, and He has shown He has delivered us and will deliver us if we put our trust in Him as a nation once again.
Amen. All right, Ted Pike, thanks for being with me tonight, and keep up the wonderful work, okay?
Thank you, Rick.
Amen. Good night, everybody.